diversity, diversity, diversity.
Yes, of course, confusion.
Oh, trash is bored.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I have to say this has been an extraordinary couple of days. I'm not sure if I've ever seen anything quite like it, to be honest, because when I say the establishment is in meltdown, I mean they're really in meltdown. Yes, we've had a decade of people calling Donald Trump a fascist and the next coming of Hitler, yada, yada, yada. Something's different. Something's different because this time there's a strong sense in the air of, oh my fucking God, he actually is. Holy shit. He actually is mental. And I think there's some element of this that is felt not only by the shitlib center neoliberal establishment, but also basically by everybody. And this is, I mean, I've just recorded conversations with Black Horse and with Todd Lewis about the geostrategic situation, European security, how Europeans should think about America in terms of a threat, in terms of, you know, is it an enemy now? But the conversation that I had with Black Horse and with Todd Lewis was actually a lot more measured, a lot more grounded, you might say, than the sorts of conversations that have been happening on LBC radio for the past 2 days. My phone is broken at the moment, which means I've got LBC on the car all the time. I listened to the entirety of James O'Brien's show earlier on and the entirety of Andrew Marr last night. And I swear now, they are saying stuff that is just crazy. I mean, I listened to an interview earlier on where James O'Brien had this German guy on talking about the possibility of Russia using nukes on the base in Ramstein. They are talking about kicking America off the bases in Europe. Seriously. There is a general who we will watch, a British general, major general, who appeared on Andrew Marr last night saying, this is not only the end of NATO, but we have to start thinking about America in terms of security threat. Okay. The fact that people are having conversations like this, the fact that this is the, like, I mean, this general said, look, we have to plan for the worst case scenario. And the worst case scenario is, what if America opens fire on European troops in Greenland? What is our response? Okay, this is a senior member of the British establishment actually entertaining war with America on air. Okay, when I say they're in meltdown, when I say something's happening, this is, I've never heard talk like this ever in my life. Things have been brought up. Okay, and I mentioned some of this stuff when I talked to Todd and Black Horse about this that you'll see in tomorrow's videos. But, I mean, one of the things that was mentioned was, well, if a NATO member was actually attacked, would the Americans actually be there? Can you rely on them? And it was mentioned that Eisenhower, if the USSR had attacked, you know, a minor member of NATO back in that period, Eisenhower wouldn't have been there. And they also said JFK would probably have backed out. So given that was the case even back then, there's no doubt that Trump would not be there for the Europeans, okay? The fact that these sorts of things were being openly discussed, right? That's the sort of conversation that, you know, you might have heard Thomas 777 say it 5 years ago or something like that, okay? Now it's like mainstream conversation on LBC radio. Another really interesting thing has happened, which is that, I mean, I've been listening to conversations. I know that Morgoth went on Frodi. In fact, Frodi went on Morgoth's channel the other day, where they had a talk about European security and so on and so forth. And this morning, Morgoth had a tweet where he was quoting the front page of the Daily Mail. Okay, the front page of the Daily Mail. And I'll just show you this Morgoth tweet. And here's where it gets really interesting. Okay, so this is Richard Littlejohn in the Daily Mail. Okay, oh my God, the Daily Mail. He says, Trump should raise his sights from Greenland and buy Britain instead. I take him, warts and all, over our hopeless, complete and utter lawyer of a PM any day. Okay. And Morgoth says, there's a great stinking cow part with a sign on it that to the centre-right punditry. Step on me and be called a traitor and discredit yourself. And they're gleefully jumping on it. And lo and behold, okay, so that's the take, okay, from the online, you know, the online right, okay, the European online right, which are breaking with Trump at a rapid pace as things stand. And as I was listening to LBC earlier on today, lo and behold, James O'Brien had a 30-minute rant about that Daily Mail article, which he has declared the worst article ever published in the Daily Mail, or in recent history at any rate, where he compares Richard Littlejohn to Lord Haw Haw, right? He is comparing Littlejohn to Lord Haw Haw. If you don't know your history, Lord Haw Haw was somebody who sided with the Germans, sided with the Nazis during World War II, okay? This is James O'Brien, an absolute shitlib, accusing a Daily Mail columnist of being a collaborationist with a hostile foreign power. Quite how the conversation has got here, quite how this is where we are, it is just remarkable. And it all comes down to Trump on Greenland. It all comes down to Trump's kind of increasingly erratic behavior. You know, there was the Maduro kidnapping, there was all the stuff in Iran, where Trump seemed to support the rebels and then backed out or then didn't do anything. Right, there was all of that, and then there was, you know, bellicose rhetoric against the Canadians and Mark Carney and all of that sort of stuff. But it's really the thing that the establishment is treating as an existential threat is Greenland, and they're really digging in on it, and they're really treating it as a matter of great importance. As a result of this, we're going to be watching quite a bit of LBC today, guys, because I have to show you the gravity, like the. I mean, when I say hysteria, the thing is that I kind of share some of these concerns. I think, like, if you're a kind of British patriot, or if you're anybody who cares about Europe or cares about, like, a European geostrategic interests, like, these things are these are serious concerns. And at this point, it's almost impossible, I think, to stand, you know, with Trump or stand with MAGA as Richard Littlejohn did in that newspaper column. So there's been, and it's not just the online right, the European populist right, Giorgia Meloni, Le Pen, Farage, Tice, they've all had to come in behind Starmer and behind Macron on this, because it's an existential issue. It's like, it's bigger than party. It's bigger, you know, this goes to, you know, like, this is it. This is kind of proper world history now. Kind of exciting in a way, but it's also terrifying in a way. Before we get going, I'll just remind everybody, promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses all the way until the end of January. Okay, buy it now, etc. And with all of that said, I think Andrew Marr had Michael Gove on. And we're going to watch Ma, okay? And then we're going to watch some O'Brien and some Ferrari and various other people as well. This may be a long show because there's quite a bit to get through today. We're also going to touch on, so the main story is the panic around the Greenland stuff. We're also going to touch on the defection of Robert Jendrick to Reform from the Tories. That's another huge story that's happened in the past week. We are also going to touch on this board of peace that Trump has announced with Tony Blair sitting on it. He's also offered places on it for $1 billion. And another thing that they're going crazy about on LBC is that Trump has offered a place to Vladimir Putin on the board of peace. What's crazy is that he did it in the same press conference where he cited the threat of Russian invasion as a pretext for taking Greenland. Like, and then literally in the next breath offered a place to Putin on the board of peace. You actually couldn't make it up. And when these shitlibs are saying Trump is absolutely mental and, you know, we did tell you and all of that, I'm listening. I'm thinking, do you know what? After an hour of James O'Brien, there's almost nothing I disagree with that he's saying here, or Andrew Marr or any of these. Like, when it comes to this, it's almost like there's a kind of been a sliding doors moment here where all of a sudden I'm seeing things like we have the same view. Like, somehow my view of it is pretty similar to the kind of shitlib center view of it. This is the calamity, in a way, of what Trump is doing. So let's start with Marr, and then we'll get going on this.
Night with Andrew Marr.
Good evening, friends. It's tempting to joke about Donald Trump wanting to put Putin on the Gaza Board of Peace, or about his extraordinary letter to the Norwegian Prime Minister having a tantrum about not getting the Nobel Peace Prize and warning that he'd gone off the idea of peace for a bit. But this is a genuinely dangerous and serious moment. It's not the subject for joking. The Greenland shakedown threatens to destroy NATO. Keir Starmer, I thought...
I mean, I'm actually sitting there listening, thinking... what's happened here? Will LBC reprogram my mind? Or is Trump that crazy and that off the rails and America gone so rogue that this is the only way to see things? Because I mean, there's a few bits of disagreement I have on Ukraine and a few other things, but, you know, like, he's right. I mean, this is mental. Like, some of the stuff, even by Trump standards, has been created. That letter he sent to Norway about the Nobel Prize. I mean, this stuff is, I mean, okay, we come to expect some degree of this, but I mean, even by his standards, this may be it. Like, maybe the moment where people look back and like, fuck, you know, everybody was right about this guy. He is crazy. But anyway, let's carry on.
Spoke very well this morning about the importance of our relationship with the United States and the need to respond to the tariff threat in a grown-up, conciliatory way.
On Greenland, right way to approach an issue of this seriousness is through calm discussion between allies. And let's be clear, the security of Greenland matters, and it will matter more as climate change reshapes the Arctic.
But the truth is, all that biting his tongue, all that being polite and making nice to President Trump, has won Starmer very little in the long run. We are all back in a world dominated by bullies. We are not very big. The EU, which is very big, is threatening huge tariff retaliation of its own, 93 billion euros worth, and closing markets to US companies, and some European voices are in favour of...
What I'm worried about here, friends, is that it's like... okay, people are having fun in the short term. But it also feels like this may be a moment where the shitlibs have won a lot of the arguments, right? Because they can genuinely look back and say, we were right and you guys were wrong. We were right and you guys were wrong. And it's not necessarily about NATO continuing and all of that. I mean, I'm not a big... I want European sovereignty. I want American bases out of Europe and so on and so forth, as you know. But it's like... how can I say? Let's do it through watching them, and I'll explain exactly where I agree with them as we go.
Pumping U.S. debt and working with China, you can almost hear the tectonic plates grinding. For us, outside the EU and unsure now about our relations with Trump, I think if we are being forced to make a big strategic choice, we have to choose Europe. Brexit took us out of its marketplace, but...
And this is the line from Marr and from O'Brien and from many, many other people now. This is the moment that Europeans have to fight, have to stand up to America, have to recognize the enemy for what it is. And honestly, the rhetoric on LBC has been so bellicose that, I mean, it's almost like they're the radical ones, and the sorts of shows I'm doing feel like mild, dare I say, sensible and centered compared to the rhetoric we're seeing from people like this. Okay, so let's carry on.
Also, out of an infuriatingly slow-moving, pious, and not particularly democratic political system. I don't want to go back to that. But instinctively, in our values, at this crunch moment, could we really side with this American leader doing and saying these things? In a moment, I'm going to talk to Douglas Alexander, the Scottish Secretary, but also the former Trade Minister and a man who knows American politics very well. But there are questions which are even harder-edged about what happens if the US actually does send troops into Greenland soon, and what our defences would look like if America was suddenly removed from the alliance.
The two interviews I want to watch, by the way, one is with General Sharif and one is with Michael Gove. They really hit me because these are kind of like right-wing figures or, you know, military security types talking in a way that I've never heard. I'll skip the Scottish guy, I think.
Deal with that. Let's begin tonight with General Sir Richard Sheriff, the former Deputy Supreme Allied Commander for Europe and author of War with Russia, An Urgent Warning. Where did he think the US leaving NATO would leave us militarily?
In not a good place. But it would mean that Europe, the European member states of NATO, and Canada would be forced now to think through a...
I'll stop interrupting in a second. I just want to say, I mean, later on, I've got a video about political kayfabe and pro wrestling terminology for political analysis and so on and so forth. If this is kayfabe, this is the best bloody kayfabe I've ever seen, because they are, I mean, if these guys are working, this is like the best work of all time. I don't get the impression that they're working. I get the impression this is a shoot, brother. This is a shoot. This is legit, in my opinion. But tell me if you think I'm wrong.
A new security architecture for the transatlantic region, less America. I don't think it necessarily means creating a new organization. I do think it would make sense to build it on the foundations of the old America plus NATO, because if America is no part of that alliance, there is still a command.
You see, this is why I'm doing the video. A shoot, like, where I explain all of these terms once and for all. A shoot is basically, it's not kayfabe. This is happening for real. This is happening in real life. It's not a work. It's not scripted. It's not, like, this is not meant to happen, right? And what I'm saying is, this stuff that we're talking about here appears, I don't think General Sir Richard Sharif is kayfabing us. I think this is real. I think it's actually happening. And I think that the panic that we're seeing is real.
Structure, there is still a doctrine, there is still interoperability, there are procedures and processes, and an understanding of multinationality which has underpinned the alliance and done it very well in its 76 years. So build on that.
Still very well worth having. But of course, under these circumstances, I assume Britain loses her nuclear deterrence.
Well, Britain has a so-called independent nuclear deterrence, but it is dependent on America, I understand.
Thanks, Margaret Thatcher. That was Thatcher. I covered it in my review of Adam Curtis, Oceans Apart, where we watched Margaret Thatcher give away nuclear sovereignty against the advice of Michael Heseltine. I can't remember which episode it was, but it was one of the early reviewing Adam Curtis's.
I'm not a nuclear expert for servicing and the like, so I think that must be an assumption.
Given that Russia, the former Soviet Union, then Russia, has tried for so long, so desperately, to break the transatlantic alliance, and that it seems to be very close to breaking right now this evening because of an American president. Can you reflect on the damage that Donald Trump has so far done to NATO?
Catastrophic. It's very difficult to see how NATO can come back from this as a unified alliance with the levels of total trust that underpinned it for 76 years, or at least until President Trump's first tour. So this is a potential disaster for NATO. The idea, the very notion that this alliance in which collective defense has been founded on the premise that an armed attack on one is an attack on all, is now facing the threat, the very real threat of military action being taken by its lead nation, America, on another NATO ally. And don't forget, of course, he's already threatened another NATO ally's territorial integrity with Canada.
Canada, absolutely. If the worst happens, and we just have to follow through the dire logic in this situation, and we have American troops in Greenland firing on and perhaps killing European troops, at that moment...
I just want to stress how mental the fact that we're even talking about this is. The fact that Andrew Marr just asked a former British general that question is fucking mental. Let's just pause. I mean, I know postmodern politics is fun and clown world and all the rest of it, but this is mental. Let's carry on.
Is that when all the American air bases in Germany and in this country and around Europe are closed? Do you think that's the kind of action we might see being taken by the Europeans?
Very probably. And let me just say here that this has come about because people have not taken Trump literally. And one's been saying for about a year now, we have to assume that with Trump, the worst than worst case will apply. And this is absolutely what has happened now. So to your question about what actions might be taken, this is what needs to be this is what needs to be happening now. Wargaming, thinking through the implications of the scenario you've described, American troops launching military action against NATO, European troops in Greenland. This is what needs to be going on now in Whitehall and in all European NATO capitals and in Brussels as well, led by Mr. Rutte, who has been very quiet on this. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a British general talking on air, a prime time, Andrew Marr. We need to think about wargaming, actual war with the Americans over Greenland. Okay. Somebody in the chat said, you're engaged. This is hysterics. You're engaging in hysterics and so on. I mean, yeah, but also no. Also, like, there's a step. I mean, hysterics are like, you know, shitlibs going crazy, calling Trump a fascist and all the rest of it. We've seen that a million times. You're racist, you're this, you're that. What I'm saying is this guy talking about war games, right? War game scenarios with European troops against American troops, it's not hysterical to say that this is crazy. The fact that this is happening is mental. That's not hysterical. That is like, this is actually happening. Anyway, let's carry on.
It's about wargaming. Any potential contingency and actions to be taken should the worst happen, because we have to assume the worst will happen.
Final blunt question. Without America, there's still Russia there. They're no doubt hooting with laughter at the moment. Could we defend ourselves against Russia without America?
We're going to have to. And if we bring together the nations of NATO, the 31 nations of NATO, with their combined GDPs, their combined populations, their combined military forces, as they are, however lacking in capability they might be at the moment, and I'm thinking of the hollow nature of our own armed forces, we still have the means to overmatch and outdo Russia. So we have to assume but it's going to be a come-as-you-are party.
Sir Richard Shearer, a very solemn evening. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
Well, the politics...
Just fucking crazy. Just absolutely crazy what they're talking about here. And you see, the reason I'm taking this seriously is that these sorts of conversations don't happen on a station like LBC unless they're actually priming the public for something. Okay? A military guy like that, the security state, doesn't let messaging like that go out unless they think it's actually happening. So this is actually happening. Or, genuinely, none of these people have a fucking clue what's happening. Either case, something's happening, right? I know everybody likes to bank on nothing ever happening, but to me, this seems like a something happening. Last time I thought something was happening, the clown show in the Oval Office with Zelensky, it turned out I was wrong. Nothing happened. This time, I don't know, I just get a different sense. I really do.
...of all of this are agonizing. My next guest has been sitting around the cabinet table while, I guess, ministers agonize. Let's welcome Douglas Alexander.
Okay, I'm going to skip this guy because I want to get to the Michael Gove part. I'm going to get to the Michael Gove interview because this was very interesting to hear Gove talk in these terms. There's also a little bit of Robert Jendrick action in there as well.
The side of politics, someone perhaps who's met and interviewed Donald Trump himself. What's going on in his mind? Well, I asked the Tory grandee, now editor of The Spectator, Michael Gove. Now, Lord Gove, how he thought Stumm had done this morning in responding to the US president.
Well, he's in an almost impossible position. He knows, he sought to articulate this, that for 101 reasons, commercial principally, but also defense and intelligence, Britain is so intertwined with America and our interests depend so much on decisions taken by the American administration that we can't afford to go studs up against the US. But at the same time...
See, I wonder about that because in my conversation with Black Horse Yet to Air, we talk about Mark Carney's tactics. Mark Carney is going studs up and he's in a much more precarious situation because obviously America's right there. And yet Carney has chosen to go maximalist and fight and put on these conferences with the Chinese. And like he's pursuing a very high risk strategy. Starmer is being a very weaselly, almost kind of like trying to act the worm tongue or something like this, trying to weasel, trying to kowtow. And I mean, if you think of Trump's psychology, I'm not sure if Trump respects that. I think actually Trump, in a way, respects people to stand up to him a bit more. I mean, I wouldn't even put it past Trump to respect the Ayatollah more now that he's shown some spine and some backbone. You know, do you remember all the Rocket Man stuff with Kim in North Korea or Putin or Xi? Or like, he actually seems to respect other bullies. Right. And I don't think he respects this weaselly behavior from Starmer. I think he sees him as weak and pathetic and to be stomped on. So, I mean, Trump is basically like, what was that book? Might is Right, Ragnall Redbeard or something. Like, I mean, there's obviously some different type of code that Trump goes by. Mafia, right? Mafia, big fish or little fish. And in a way, The Starmer strategy, in my view, is not working. Starmer is made to look a mug again and again and again. Starmer's been mugged off by Trump a lot and is having to eat a lot of shit. And I don't think it's worked. I mean, and look, has Canada been that badly punished? Has Trump invaded Canada? No. So I don't know. Anyway, let's carry on.
He will feel that both are European allies, and also in his soul, what Trump has been saying is deeply offensive. Mm. So there'll be an emotional impetus to get out there, to have the Love Actually moment, to do as Mark Carney has done, and to give a voice. He's not particularly passionate, but, you know.
By the way, look at the Churchill, top right, look at the Churchill. Yuck.
To muster his full barristerial eloquence against Trump. But he also knows that when you are faced with someone who's acting as impetuously as Trump, there is a premium on a greater degree of respectability.
We're talking on a remarkable day in Trump studies. We've had that extraordinary letter he wrote to the Norwegian Prime Minister, basically saying, you didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize, so I'm no longer interested in peace. We've had him auctioning places on the Gaza Peace Board for $1 billion a time and asking Vladimir Putin whether he would sit on that board as well. I don't quite know how to put this, but is there a case for saying that Donald Trump has lost it?
Well, it certainly seems to be the case that he's in full Lex Luthor mode. I mean, he is. It almost seems as though he is determined to portray himself as a Marvel villain. Mm. And the Board of Peace.
What's he doing? See, but like, I know everybody likes the theory craft, and oh, it's 4D chess, and but seriously, what the fuck is Trump doing? Like, I mean. At the moment, I don't think anybody knows. I don't think anybody knows what he's doing. Because Gove is right. He's acting like a supervillain. But for what possible purpose?
Opposition, when it was first put forward, did seem, even for those of us who might have some sympathy with Trump's ability in the past to get things done in the Middle East, the Board of Peace plan did seem as though it were, the archetypal villain drawing together his hench people to carve up the Levant. And then the letter that he sent to the Norwegians.
There's a guy in the chat just saying, whatever, AA. That's not an answer, though, is it? That's not an answer. The question was, what the fuck is Trump doing? The answer isn't, oh, well, whatever. It's not an answer.
If it had been sent to me by my son when he was 8, I would have regarded it as juvenile even then. Mm. Yet, there has been, and this will be in the mind of some, there has been method in past Trump madness. Now, it may be that the lunacy and the ego have now got to a level where they are unchecked, but I think it's probably wise for all of us just to wait to see. That doesn't mean one approves. It just means one doesn't know exactly what his final game plan might be.
Caution is always...
I mean, but what if he's actually mad, though? This is like you read this stuff in history, you know, the madness of King George or something, like the king has gone crazy and everybody's tiptoeing around him and nobody quite wants to... Like, what if this is genuinely, like he has genuinely lost it? It's just just a bizarre thing to live through. Anyway, let's carry on.
A good thing. But does there come a moment when Trump becomes an enemy?
Well, I think there's certainly a point where he becomes such a renegade, because I don't think one should regard America as an enemy, that one has to recalibrate things more radically. At the moment, I think Starmer is right to exercise that degree of caution, to car canny, still. But the provocation is moving dangerously close to the point where a more fundamental reassessment might be required, yes.
And if, I mean, there are rumours again today of American special forces training to go into Greenland. There are European NATO troops in Greenland. The worst could happen and we could lose NATO, couldn't we?
Well, that would be the very worst. I still can't quite believe, but maybe I'm too much a prisoner of the past, that such a thing would happen. I'm more inclined to believe, with Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, that all of these are manoeuvres and part of Trump's art of the deal.
Can I just pause there? Sorry to... Wasn't Lord Mandelson forced to resign over Epstein? You'd have thought that would be it for Mandy, right? Still quoted as an authority, still quoted as, you know, in strategic thinking, still part of the establishment, still a lord, nothing's happened to him, you know, admiringly talked of by Gove here. Incredible. Let's carry on.
Whereby he makes an approach with menaces, then with blandishments, and then eventually settles for something short of the initial imperious demand. But I think that while one can admire brinksmanship from time to time, there is a point where the patience of your partners is so tested that actually, whatever the prize you get, the price is too high.
Let's turn to, I devoutly hope you're right about that. Let's turn to domestic politics, if you don't mind.
And I'll let this play because I want to talk about Jenrik. I haven't made a video on Jenrik because I don't like him. But let's see what Gove says.
Robert Jenrik has gone over to Reform, famously, and Mr. Rossendale as well. The interesting argument going on the right here, really, about tone. In other words, Reform are saying Britain is broken, we're in a terrible state, and it's going to need a revolution to turn us around. Kemi Badenoch is saying, no, Britain is not broken. All it needs is conservative reforms and changes. Which do you think is the shrewder strategy in terms of all those voters up and down the country who can't stand Labour and are trying to work out where to go next?
I think it's undoubtedly better, even when...
Guy in chat who's just said Jenrik is based is banned. Never show your face again here. Anybody else who says Jenrik is based will be banned.
Times are grim. For a leader to be optimistic, that doesn't mean that they should be in denial about some of the problems that we face. But the most successful conservatives are those who are optimistic. So Ronald Reagan, quintessentially... Mm. And Margaret Thatcher, I think one wouldn't say that she was sunny, but she certainly had a belief in Britain's greatness and its capacity to recover.
I'm just seeing the glowering face of Spengler. Optimism is cowardice. At the hour of decision, you speak your hopeful lies. Michael Gove, you are not a conservative, says Oswald Spengler. The glowering faces of Carlyle and Spengler and all of the actual sages of the past. The best conservative is an optimist or a load of shite.
So I think you can argue, if you're on the right, that Labour are broken. I think you can argue that some of the institutions of Britain are broken. But once you start to argue that the country fundamentally is broken, then I think that you're in a pessimistic and more than that, perhaps that potentially apocalyptic frame of
mind.
Yes,
it does sound very dark, doesn't it?
And exactly.
It seems to me that sort of dark analysis leads to cruel policies in the end. Do you think that,
potentially, yes.
Do you think that Robert Jenrik's a loss to the Conservative Party?
Yes, I think he is net. So I think that obviously the manner in which he left and the broadside that he launched against his former colleagues would mean that most of them would think that they're well shot of him at the moment. But he does have ability. He's an effective speaker in the House. He's a super effective presence on social media. And as we both know, in personal terms, he's personable and thoughtful. The challenge that he and Reform face is that the public persona that he has, partly as a result of this defection and partly as a result of, as you've described, his stated reason, the failure of the Tories to state defiantly that Britain is broken, all of that risks making him more of a sort of renegade, you know, Enoch Powell 2.0 or 3.0. And the thing about Powell is that everyone knew that he was a man of great intelligence and foresight, but it was also the case that there was a, as you say, there was a slightly unnerving, uncanny element to the way in which he put his message across, to which the British public never truly warmed.
That's just bollocks. 68% of the British public at a minimum supported Enoch Powell. Okay. And this comparison between Enoch Powell, a principled British patriot who didn't really waver in his views and a true intellectual, and a two-bit carny fucking opportunist snake like Jenrik is an insult to Enoch Powell. What an insult to Enoch Powell to compare opportunistic, snake-like, a man with zero actual beliefs, Jenrik, the man who was the immigration minister when, you know, under Boris and Sunak, who then, you know, sniffs the wind changing and now, you know, he's sounding base and now the Tories are a disaster. He was literally part of the fucking government. Awful analysis from Gove. What a bunch of rubbish.
That is really, really interesting. Finally, Michael, I have to ask you, you'll have seen Robert Jenrick's interesting and amusing war with Liz Truss, and Liz Truss responding yes. by suggesting that somebody, and I think she was thinking of you, is pulling Rob Jenrick's strings.
Look at his little sneaky... Did you ever watch, like, Blackadder the First, the smarmy face of Blackadder the First, and sly, you know, it was you, wasn't it? You're the mover and the shaker. You made this happen. Look at his sneaky little Machiavellian face.
A kind of Dr. Evil, if I can put it that way, sitting in the background, manipulating defections between the two parties.
The look on his face was basically, yeah, it was me. He was just talking about how Trump is a supervillain and Lex Luthor. There he is, like a snake in the background, maneuvering Jenrick over to reform.
Are you Dr. Evil?
many people might think so. The truth is that while I may disagree with Rob on some things, I did think that in his article in the Times today, his analysis of Liz's premiership was correct. So to take nothing away from how good she was as a junior education minister, I don't think Liz was a very good prime minister. And Rob Jenrick is, whatever else, on the button.
Look, his language changed. Now he's Rob. Now it's my mate Rob. He's basically, this is like Westminster talk for, yeah, it was me. I'm going to make this happen. Reform's going to be the government. And I'm the Svengali making sure that T1000 reforms. That's basically it. There he is. What a snake.
In that respect.
And you're pulling nobody's strings.
Absolutely not. I am no Gerry Anderson.
It's always very pleasurable to talk to you, Lord Gove, Michael Gove. Thank you very much indeed for talking to Thanks, LBC sir. Tonight.
Fucking hell. What an absolute snake. Incredible. Okay. So that was a little detour into domestic politics, but we're going to have to go back to Greenland because there's been so much craziness, so much craziness. Let's have a look at the stuff with the Norwegian PM and the press conference that he gave with Ferrari. Let's have a look at this one.
Change leaked to the US media yesterday. The president can be seen telling the Prime Minister of Norway he no longer feels an obligation to think purely of peace, his words not mine, and appeared to show he was motivated to take over Greenland after being snubbed for the Nobel Peace Prize. Here is the text message sent from President Trump to Jonas Gahr Støre, voiced by one of the production team.
Dear Jonas, considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize for having stopped 8 wars plus, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant, but can now think about what is good and proper for the United States of America. Denmark cannot protect that land from Russia or China, and why do they have a right of ownership anyway? There are no written documents. It's only that a boat landed there 100 of years ago, but we have boats landing there also. I have done more for NATO than any other person since its founding, and now NATO should do something for the United States. The world...
I mean, this is like a letter written by a child, and yet it's the letter of the President of America to the leader of group of Denmark.
Is not
Norway, I should say, Norway.
Not secure unless we have complete and total control of Greenland. Thank you, President DJT.
Now, what he seems to unfortunately ignore is the fact that the Norway government has absolutely no way of influencing or way of determining who is going to be in receipt of the Nobel Peace Prize, something that I read he has been told on past occasions and he's chosen to ignore. Now, speaking this morning before boarding Air Force One, President Trump...
Nothing says I don't care about the Nobel Peace Prize like saying, yeah, I really don't care about it. I'm going to keep on bringing it up. I really don't care about the Nobel Peace Prize. I'll mention it every other time you see me. Fucking... A ridiculous figure. Oh, man. It's funny, if nothing else, but it's also like, Jesus.
Now claims he doesn't care about this prize.
No, I don't care about the Nobel Prize. First of all, a very fine woman felt that I deserved it and really wanted me to have the Nobel Prize, and I appreciate that. If anybody thinks that Norway doesn't control the Nobel Prize, they're just kidding. They have a board, but it's controlled by Norway, and I don't care what Norway says. But I really don't care about that. What I care about is saving lives. And I think I've saved tens of millions of lives.
So you don't care about it, Mr. President, and then you then go on to tell us all how it actually works. Can I put it to you that perhaps it does rankle a little bit? He also addressed that Greenland issue more widely, telling reporters he would be speaking about it with European leaders in Davos this week.
We have to have it. They have to have this done. They can't protect it. Denmark, they're wonderful people.
He's getting like, it's like a penguin out of Batman or something. We have to have it, you know. I play in a stinking city like a hot tub from here. What is going on? He has become like a supervillain cartoon. This is just so... This is one of the weirdest stories I've ever covered on this channel, I think.
And I know the leaders are very good people, but they don't even go there. And, you know, because a boat went there 500 years ago and then left, that doesn't give you title to property. So,
what a ridiculous thing to say when you're the president of America, a country founded by bloody British colonialists. What a fucking ridiculous thing to say. Oh my God. It's just insane.
We'll be talking about it with the various people. We've had tremendous success, and I've done more for NATO than anybody else. I don't think you'd have NATO right now. I got them to go 5% and pay, as opposed to 2% and not pay. I've done more than any other American president for NATO by far, and we'll see how that goes. But Greenland is very important.
So that's the president shouting over the engines of Air Force One, just about winning. But he's been busy on social media as well. He shared a private post from Emmanuel Macron, well, private no longer, of course, in which Monsieur Macron's message reads as follows. My friend, we are totally in line on Syria. We can do great things on Iran. I do not understand what you're doing on Greenland. Let us try to build great things. One, I can set up a G7 meeting after Davos in Paris on Thursday afternoon. I can invite the Ukrainians.
I mean, talk about a scumbag, right? It doesn't matter how small your group chat, you don't share DMs in public. Don, this is the Anon code. He's sharing DMs in public. This is scumbag behaviour, even if they are DMs from Emmanuel Macron. Fucking ridiculous scenario.
The Danish, the Syrians, and the Russians in the margins. You'll note no Britain, British involvement. Two, let us have dinner in Paris together on Thursday before you go back to the US. So that's a private post, which is now, of course, known to the world. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, again on social media, has let us know, and I quote, I've had a very good telephone call with Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, concerning Greenland. I agreed to a meeting with the various parties in Davos, Switzerland. As I expressed to everyone very plainly, Greenland is imperative for national and world security. There can be no going back. He goes on to say, and I'll say where they are, we are the only, quote, caps power that can ensure peace throughout the world. And it is done quite simply through strength, signed the president. And then the most recent, unless there's been one while I've been speaking in the last 20 minutes or so, it concerns the United Kingdom. Shockingly, our brilliant NATO ally, the United Kingdom, is currently planning to give away the island of Diego Garcia, the site of a vital US military base, to Mauritius for no reason whatsoever. There is no doubt China and Russia have noticed this act of total weakness. These are international powers who only recognise capital's strength, which is why the United States of America, under my leadership, is now, after only 1 year, respected like never before. The UK giving away extremely important land is an act of, quote, of capital's great stupidity, and another in a very long line of national security reasons why Greenland has to be acquired. Denmark and its European allies have to do the right thing. He signs off, thank you for your attention to this matter. But that's a social media. That's what you normally do if you're writing to your bank because they haven't paid a direct debit. Where do we go? Where do we start? Is it an act of great stupidity? Do you imagine that some peace can break out in Davos? Where do you want to start with Donald J. Trump? It was already... We don't want to completely Trump you out here. How would you characterise what we heard almost a day ago, Sir Ed? Morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Nick. I mean, on one level, I have sympathy with the Prime Minister. Traditionally, the UK has been strong...
Now, if you're not familiar with British politics, you might be thinking that this is like, branch manager of a local Halifax building society or something like that. This is Ed Davey, the leader of the Lib Dems. That's who is talking here. The leader of the Liberal Democrats.
When we've had a strong relationship with the White House and with Europe, and we've managed both those, and we've, over the decades, it's been really important to us. But I think you just have to accept it. It's like having a reality TV show host in the White House. This man is unhinged. And I think the only way you're going to deal with this person is realising we need a different approach. And I think the Prime Minister's approach has been proven to be wrong, to be honest. We've had a year.
See, the thing is, I agree with Ed Davey. I think the Starmer's approach is wrong. You can't be a weasel. You can't be a worm tongue. You have to be strong. You just said the other countries respect strength. So why are you worm-tonguing about, begging about, acting like Reek? He's going to stomp on you. I think Ed Davey's right. I honestly do. I think the Trump would respect it more if he stopped acting like a little poodle or something.
Year of this president, I think appeasing, fawning, trying to persuade him, I regret to say, I don't think it worked. And I think you're going to have to stand up to him. And that's what we've been saying. He's a bully. We've got to work with our allies, as difficult as it is, and say no to Donald.
And what does that, quote, standing up look like, Sir Ed?
Well, it's not doing what the Prime Minister did yesterday. You know, for example, the Europeans and others have said, look, if he does put tariffs on, we will regrettably look at retaliatory tariffs. You know, we'll fight back. I mean, no one wants that. No one wants a trade war. You know, everyone loses. But we've got to stand up to him in those ways. And the Prime Minister has almost taken those off the table. And I think you've got to work with your partners, really. And remember, the midterm elections are just around the corner. He's doing dreadfully in the polls. He's had a lot of pressure, even from his own side. So I think he's much weaker than he would like to admit to. And I think, therefore, working with our partners, we can stand up to him and get him to stop. He's backed down before.
You're right to point to those midterms, Sir Ed. There is...
Taco, Trump always chickens out. I mean, these are actually decent points from Ed Davey here, in my view. As much as I have disliked his back catalogue, I mean, I find myself just in agreement with these establishment figures on this story, I'm afraid.
It's a characterisation that...
I will always tell you the truth, even if it ends up agreeing with the likes of Ed Davey and James O'Brien.
As you rightly say, he's not doing well. If his party performs badly, he's effectively neutered. That's why he's trying to get everything he possibly can done this side of the midterms. How accurate a depiction is that in your view?
Yeah, and I've heard that, we have to be ready for that. However, if he breaks the law and goes against American opinion, which he is. I mean, most Americans think he's totally wrong on Venezuela and Greenland and so on. If he loses the Senate and the House of Representatives in the midterms, they will impeach him. So he's also got to think about that. He's got to think about the backlash if he keeps breaking the law and going against American opinion, let alone British and European right. opinion.
Last minute or so together, two questions. Would you support trade wars?
No one wants trade wars, but you have to stand tough and you cannot take retaliatory tariffs on the table. You know, I've been saying for a long time, Nick, we need alternatives. That's why I've argued for, a new UK-EU customs union so we can grow our trade elsewhere if we have to see this protectionist president tearing up the rule book and putting tariffs on our industries.
Final question. We were going to speak on the Board of Peace. These texts and social media posts have happened overnight. Just a quick word on that, the idea that the Kremlin could join President Trump's, Russia could join President Trump's Board of Peace. Ed Davey.
They haven't played it, by the way, but he said that outside that helicopter, just after he said about Greenland, he then said, Putin would be welcome on the board of peace if he pays $1 billion.
It shows how Donald Trump is so out of control. You know, on one level, he's saying, you know, Russia's a threat in the Arctic. He has to have Greenland. And then he's putting Putin on a board of peace. I mean, come on. That's totally incoherent. And, it's laughable. And that's why he's no more than a bad reality TV.
It's just struck me that Ed Davey looks a lot like that dad who's in it. Like, he plays dads in, like, rom-coms. And what's the name of that actor? He looks exactly like him. He's in like tons of like kids films. And you think of that actor, Ed Davey looks exactly like him. I've never noticed that before. What's his name? Tom something. I'll see if I can remember what actor I've got in mind, but he was in like every film. He's in Paddington, for example.
Show host.
That's it, Hugh Bonneville. That's it, Hugh Bonneville. All right, it's time for the dog-faced gremlin now. James O'Brien, I listened to like all 2 hours, and honestly, I thought that O'Brien, it's one of the few times I've ever agreed with him. But let's see what he has to say.
How much coverage you've seen or read today of Donald Trump's ludicrous comments about the so-called Chagos Island deals? It's very unpopular with the usual sort of ignorant racists all over Twitter who don't understand anything or follow the facts or events. But you'd have thought on this occasion they might have actually double-checked what Donald Trump had to say about it at the time, or indeed what his Secretary of State Marco Rubio had to say about it all those many, many moons ago in... I don't like doing that, hashtag checks notes or whatever it is. But May of 2025, May the 22nd, 2025. So just lest you are confused about what is going on, Donald Trump has made his enmity towards Europe and the United Kingdom crystal clear. His designs upon sovereign European territory are now visible from space. You either abandon your pathetic, mealy-mouthed support for the man, or you erect ever more ludicrous facades of fraudulence and stupidity.
I agree with you, James O'Brien. This is the trouble. Fuck, I agree with James O'Brien. Get out your slop brain. Get out of the slop brain. Wake up, for fuck's sake.
Stupidity, in order to mask your own sense of humiliation and shame at having backed such an obvious wrong'un, and of course having been so obnoxious and so rude to the people who were pointing out what was, to almost everybody honest, sensible and informed, blindingly obvious. So what he has done today is essentially hand weapons to useful idiots on this side of the Atlantic and say, please throw these at your own Prime Minister. Which means that the useful idiots on this side of the Atlantic throwing weapons at their own Prime Minister are latter-day Lord Haw-Haws. They are doing the bidding of a foreign leader who wishes us harm and ill. See it in the context of the United Kingdom, if you want, or see it in the context of Europe, which he has refused to rule out military force in the process of helping himself to land that he wants. So just because you might think that you're going mad, I will file this under...
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. This is May the 22nd, 2025, and I'm mentioning it because apparently I'm the only person capable of remembering. Today, the United States welcomed the historic agreement between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Mauritius on the future of the British Indian Ocean Territory, specifically the Chagos Archipelago. We commend both the United Kingdom and Mauritius for their leadership, vision and commitment to ensure that Diego Garcia remains fully operational for the duration of the agreement. We look forward to working closely with both governments to strengthen our collaboration in support of regional peace and stability. Full stop. Signed, Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, Donald Trump's White House, May the 22nd, 2025. So why has he changed his course now? Answer, to get useful idiots to throw weapons at their own Prime Minister in acts of fairly obvious and blatant treachery. Okay?
He's right. This is the trouble. He's fucking right.
Found today, for your delectation, the single most... unhinged headline that I have had the misfortune of stumbling across in all my time commenting on the news, let alone simply the Time.
This is the one that Morgoth highlighted earlier on, by the way. This is the same one Morgoth highlighted. And this is the thing that's so worrying to me. How on earth is James O'Brien right? James O'Brien is right.
Assembling unhinged headlines for your delectation. You sort of think of Lord Haw-Haw as a mythical figure. You think of those Daily Mail front pages, hurrah for the brown shirts, the deep admiration of Hitler and his inner Nazi circle that was displayed by the owner of that newspaper, the grandfather of the current owner. And you open the pages of that organ and some others today, and you see how it happened. You see how you had people in this country in the 1930s shilling for our enemies, cheerleading for our enemies, expressing explicit admiration and praise for our enemies, or indeed for the equivalents of our enemies, their allies in our midst. Where Oswald Mosley once walked, today Nigel Farage goose steps.
Okay, I wouldn't go as far as this. He's getting a bit carried away here. I don't agree with this bit.
And there it is. I mean, these echoes of history, these reflections of the past are absolutely crystal clear, unless you don't want to see them. And the problem we've got is that, imagine this was a show that relied upon experts to explain things to us. We do occasionally, and we're very lucky to have a wonderful stable of experts, some of whom ring us unprompted and some of whom we reach out to on occasions when we need it.
See, this is so interesting, though, because, I mean, I've got a video in the archives called How to Think Like James O'Brien. And James O'Brien's entire epistemology, his entire worldview, is to get the answer from experts, right? To get the and what Trump is doing is he's actually just melting that. He is destroying that epistemological certainty that the likes of James O'Brien has to justify his smugness, okay? That is being destroyed in front of our eyes. And in a way, it's kind of like I'm happy because I hate James O'Brien. But at the same time, what he's saying here is actually true, if you can keep these two things in mind.
Sites. But you can't ring anyone today. You can't ring anyone today. That's not a criticism of colleagues who will, of course, book experts to talk about this, but there aren't any. There are no experts who have spent 20 years preparing for this moment or understanding this moment. You talk to Fiona Hill about what Russia has done to destabilize the West. You're talking to an expert, but that's in the rearview mirror now. She would not have been prepared for a moment when Donald Trump set his sights upon sovereign European territory. There are no experts who have spent their lives either preparing for this moment or studying the possible ramifications of actions like this. The European Union is under attack from the United States.
People are joking. Why didn't they call AA? All right, James, you can pick up the phone. I'll be there. me and you, I won't call you dog-faced gremlin to your face. But, I mean, the truth is, I think he's right. I don't think anybody knows what Trump is doing. I don't think there is an expert who can truly understand what's happening at the moment. Your guess is as good as mine.
States of America. At the moment, the attack is political, rhetorical, and economic. But when asked whether or not he would rule out the military, the President of the United States of America refused to reveal it. It's extraordinary. That is where we are today. The European Union, the European continent, forgive me, is under attack from a man whose motivation, by his own account, which you can't rely on, of course, seems largely to be a complete misunderstanding of how maps work and fury that he wasn't given a Nobel Peace Prize for...
There's no lie here. That is actually true. That is actually, like, what has happened. You got to laugh because I don't know what else you can do.
As a reward for ending wars that he hasn't ended. That's where we are today. Find me the expert. You can find writers of fiction. Margaret Atwood probably would be able to provide us with some insights. George Orwell, where he's still with us, would probably be able to provide us with some insights. Even Suzanne Collins would probably have a few things to say about how societies like this operate and how these people rise to the top. But there are no experts. There's nobody who can talk to you about, with depth and substance, about the tension, about the peril of a United States setting its sights on European allies while, and remember, this is part of the process of flooding the zone, but flooding the zone doesn't mean it's not happening, while inviting war criminals to join the Board of Peace for Gaza, while inviting Vladimir Putin, whose interference in Western politics played immeasurable parts in both putting Donald Trump in the White House and inflicting Brexit upon our population. He is inviting Vladimir Putin, currently embarked upon an illegal invasion of European territory, to join a, quote, Board of Peace.
Again, there's no, like, this has also actually happened. While justifying the taking of Greenland because of the threat of Putin.
End quotes. There's no expert you can book to talk about. Oh, remind me of the last time that a US president was acting against the interests of Europe and cozying up to Russian dictators. Cozying up to a Russian war criminal. Remind me of the last time. What happens usually when an American president sets his sights on European territory, alienates and insults European allies, and cozies up to war criminals and dictators, who are the obvious and sworn enemies of Western interests? What? Run me through what the playbook says about America abandoning its NATO responsibilities. Oh, hang on. When was the last time an ally arrived in the White House and got insulted viciously by the President of the United States? When was the last time that happened on live television? When's the last time we stuck the cameras in front of that? All of this is true, by the way. None of this is opinion yet. If you're frightened by it or unnerved by it or slightly shocked by it, just take a moment to process. Everything I've said is simply true. Everything.
See, this is it. Everything he's saying is true. Like, it's not happening, but it is happening, isn't it?
Everything I've said is happening. He is refusing to rule out military action in Greenland. For the record, I don't think it will happen, but we'll get on to that. He is threatening. He is making war, both rhetorical, political, and economic, against European allies. He is in the process of, or certainly looking likely to, completely abandon NATO responsibilities. And he is treating Vladimir Putin with much more respect and admiration than Volodymyr Zelensky, or for that matter, Keir Starmer, or Emmanuel Macron, let alone the Prime Minister of Norway, who he blames personally for the failure to give him the Nobel Peace Prize. There are no experts. It's extraordinary. And here's the thing about what I just said, my personal opinion that he is unlikely to deploy the military in Greenland, but I'm pretty sure I'd have said 2 months ago, or 6 months ago, he's unlikely to start blowing up boats in the sea with no evidence whatsoever that there are criminals aboard them.
That happened.
He's unlikely to start kidnapping foreign leaders.
That happened.
And accusing them of drug trafficking while simultaneously pardoning another foreign leader from the same part of the world that has been convicted in an American court of drug trafficking. It's bonkers.
That also happened. You see? He kidnapped Maduro for drug trafficking while pardoning one of the major drug traffickers. That actually happened in broad daylight.
That's right. There's no expert for that moment. We're joined now by the professor of jurisprudence from Harvard University. This has happened before, Prof, hasn't it? When was the last time an American president pardoned an international drug trafficker while also arresting and kidnapping an international an alleged international drug trafficker? So he's pardoning the convicted one, and he's kidnapping the alleged one. How does this normally play out? Well, James, I gotta tell you, I ain't never seen anything like this before. I don't know quite where that accent came from, but do bear with me, because it's never going to happen. Whether you've been pretty clear-eyed about how awful he is from the start, or whether you've been in danger of disappearing up his tailpipe, as many, many, many members of the UK media and political establishment have been, almost exactly the same ones that told you Brexit would be brilliant, Boris Johnson was a stand-up guy, Liz Truss was a financial genius, austerity was a necessary measure.
I mean, he's right. out on every single thing he said has been correct so far. No lies from O'Brien.
Almost all of the same people have been comforting, cheerleading, lauding Trump. And they now are reduced to either pretending or believing that there is a moment on the horizon when it will happen. Normality will be reimposed. He will back down. He will... the best essence of what I'm trying to describe is the people who would say, oh, don't worry about what he says, just focus on what he does. They don't say that anymore because it was always a stupid thing to say. He does what he says he will do. He will do it if he thinks he can get away with it. In the first term, there were people in the White House, Fiona Hill among them, who would have stayed his hand. Also, some of the very, very senior members of administration who he has now turned on, like Henry VIII, because they would stay his hand. They would impose decency, or at least a semblance of decency or normality. They've gone. They've all gone. If he says it, he'll do it. He'll try to do it. And if he says he wants to do it, then he wants to do it.
You see, and this is why, I mean, I actually believe what O'Brien's saying here. This is why I'm thinking that with Venezuela, there may have been no actual plan. It may actually be that Trump kidnapped Maduro because Maduro said on TV, come and get me. Come and get me. Do you remember when he said that? Come and get me. And Trump saw that as a personal kind of challenge. So he did it because he could do it. I reckon that's as good a take as any other take.
So I sit here now and say to you, with my fingers crossed behind my back, I don't think he'll deploy military force in Greenland. And I mean it. I don't think he will. But will he impose tariffs? Well, why wouldn't he? He's mad. He's definitely not mad. Oh, the lefties say. No one's really making that argument anymore, except the person responsible for the most unhinged headline in the history of unhinged headlines, which is resplendent in the Daily Mail newspaper today, and which I must remember to share with you before close of play. But there aren't any experts, because there aren't any precedents and there isn't any reason. I say that again for my own benefit, not yours. There aren't any experts because there aren't any precedents and there isn't any reason to unravel. You can't reason people out of positions that they haven't been reasoned into, but you can't reason your way through events that are entirely unreasonable. It's not even enough to chalk it up to Donald Trump's mental decline, to his narcissism, to his caprices, to his daddy issues. You can't even chalk it up to all of that because, as the Chagos Island stuff demonstrates today, he'll say one thing with his full chest on a Monday and he can say the polar opposite on a Tuesday. And his cheerleaders and fans are reduced to going along with both of it. Both things. Oh, yes. Okay, yes. Oh, no. So Farage today, here you go. The Americans have woken up to the fact that they were lied to. They were told that the UK had no choice but to surrender the Chagos Islands. This was simply not true, and now they are angry with us. That's a lie. That's a blatant and obvious, treacherous lie. Taking up the invitation of a foreign leader who wishes us ill to throw grenades, to throw abuse at our own prime minister in support of a foreign regime. It's not an exaggeration, it's a statement of fact. What Farage probably does know, but you don't, is that Brexit and Boris Johnson played a huge part in the run-up to the Chagos deal that the UK government had no choice but to sign. And as Donald Trump said, via Marco Rubio, his Secretary of State, we commend both the United Kingdom and Mauritius for their leadership, vision and commitment to ensure that Diego Garcia remains fully operational for the duration of this agreement. If you think you can trust Nigel Farage, just have a little look at some of the stuff he said about Brexit, or Boris Johnson, or Liz Truss. So there aren't any experts, which is a great opportunity for populists and liars, for the biggest fraudsters and grifters of all, because when the experts don't know what to do, the people who are full of passionate intensity but absolutely awful sometimes move into the vacuum that's created.
See, I actually believe this. I actually believe what he's saying. I do believe that Nigel Farage is a grifter and a liar and an opportunist, and that so is Boris Johnson and so is Liz Truss. And so are all the populist, sloppiest, as I call them online. See, this is the strange thing. I have come to the same conclusions from a completely different starting point from James O'Brien. I have none of the liberal priors of James O'Brien. I don't even agree with him on Ukraine and Russia. And yet I've come to all the same conclusions. And I think what's happening at the moment is that many, many other people in the so-called online right, Morgoth and Frodi and many, many others across Europe, okay, I'm seeing it up and down my timeline, coming to the same conclusions. And we can talk about the reasons for that. We can talk about why there's such dishonesty in some of these figures on the right. You know some of those reasons, okay? But I think ultimately what O'Brien is saying is right.
Well, that's where we are now. It's not going to happen. Donald Trump is not going to suddenly be overcome by the parameters of normality. Donald Trump is not suddenly going to start abiding by the international rules-based order. Donald Trump is not going to wake up tomorrow and recognise the importance of NATO, because it's important to world peace, not to him.
And I said this in my interview with Black Horse, and I've said it again in an article that I've just sent off to the magazine where I write a monthly column. Whether it will be published or not, I don't know yet. But I said it in there. My worry is actually that all of this is leading up to, you know, the right being put away, right? I mean, later on in this show, he shows a conference that Gavin Newsom put on. I actually just think that this whole process has been discrediting the right in Europe, in Britain, in Canada, around the world, in Australia, and ultimately in America. And that if the empire strikes back, if we get a President Newsom, if we get a blue wave in the midterms, the ultimate upshot of this may well be what's happened in Australia, where the entire Australian nationalist network was shut down by the Australian government. That could ultimately be the fate of what happens to the right all across Europe, because these events that we're watching play out now and the behavior of the cheerleaders, the behavior of the stopulists during these periods are basically providing the evidence trail necessary, okay, to put the right away, if you want to put it all away. I know Curtis Yarvin has also voiced concern in this sort of direction from a slightly different argumentation. You have to see that danger coming, okay? And when I'm watching a 20-minute monologue of James O'Brien and finding very little to disagree with, you can see it's like, well, okay, it's like the shitlibs are making some decent points here. The point I'm making is, if I'm thinking it, Joe Normie, the medium person, the average person, somebody who doesn't spend all their time on X and so on, somebody who's outside the echo chambers and outside of the, you know, the online spaces. I mean, we could be getting a massive readjustment backwards in about 6 months' time. Okay, this is what I'm seeing coming down the pike, as it were, and you have to entertain that possibility, because I don't actually believe, right, that, I mean, O'Brien is saying there's not going to be a moment where Trump comes back to normality, but I don't believe that Trump is serious enough to abolish the midterms, to stop elections happening, to declare himself an actual dictator, to actually establish, you know, a true power base in America and so on. I don't think he's going to do any of that. I think a lot of this stuff, which is hugely damaging that we're talking about, it still does have a theater element to it, because he's throwing entertainment to the base and so on, who are lapping all this stuff up. But in 6 months' time, in a year's time, I just wonder, what I see happening here is the neoliberal center being strengthened when Maloney and Le Pen and Farage have to fall in behind Macron and Starmer. That is the neoliberal center actually being strengthened at a moment where they're gearing up. They want to ban X. They want to, you know, they're talking about banning social media for under 16s. You've seen what's happened in Australia. You have to see this coming. This is why I'm saying, like, this is a dangerous moment in general. And O'Brien's sounding more convincing than I've ever heard him before, personally. You may still be in the mental space where you're cheering on Trump. I'm wondering if this is the end of all of that right here.
It's not going to happen. This thing that everybody thinks will eventually happen, whether you are clear-eyed about who Donald Trump is and always has been, or whether you've been clinging to the ludicrous delusion that he's anything other than a hideous monster, both personally and politically. But it's not going to happen. That moment when he steps back from the madness can't happen because the madness is the man. It's not going to happen. And do you know who is currently the biggest subscriber to the belief that it's going to happen? It's our Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. There are criticisms galore to be made about him.
O'Brien's right. This idea that Starmer and people have that actually, you know, at the end of the day, Trump doesn't mean it or something is just not true. I think Trump has shown everybody at this point that he does mean it and that he's prepared to do it, go anywhere. You watched him shrug off Epstein. You watched him told his base to get lost. All of the stuff we've seen with Trump since he became the president, I've seen enough to know O'Brien is right.
At the moment, but don't join in or don't accept the invitation from a foreign leader who wishes us harm to throw traitorous weapons at him when you can simply throw truth bombs. Keir Starmer is betting the house on Donald Trump reverting, reversing, revising. Keir Starmer is betting the house on it happening. The climb down, the reimposition of normality, the return to the status quo, the primacy of the rules-based international order. Keir Starmer is betting everything, and we haven't got much to bet, to be honest with you, and it doesn't really matter what he does. All eyes now are on Europe. But it doesn't really matter what he does. He's betting everything on Donald Trump changing. On Donald Trump not continuing to prove that he is all of the things he constantly proves himself to be. Deeply dishonest, morally bankrupt, utterly corrupt.
All correct. Utterly corrupt. I mean, the level of corruption has been extraordinary. Extraordinary. The manipulation of markets, Polymarket, fucking Trump coin, rewarded, like, sheer corruption that would make Idi Amin weep. We've watched it happen in the past year.
Own account, amoral. By his own account, a serial sex offender. All of the things that should be a liar on a scale that almost brought insurrection to the street. Well, it did bring attempted insurrection to the streets of the United States, to the streets of Washington. There are no superlatives. There is no hyperbole to describe how awful he is.
You have to understand what I'm saying, right? Because O'Brien is basically telling the truth here. If we get the blue backlash and the blue wave and the re-establishment of the neoliberal centre, this will be the story that is told. And the right, writ large, will be put away for a generation. This will be it for right-wing politics for a decade. And all of those people on Twitter, re-migration and all of that, they'll stick them in jail. And don't say they won't stick them in jail, because they will. They've done it in Australia. Do you understand what I'm saying? The libs will get to own the narrative and own the history if what I said happens. Unless Trump actually crosses the Rubicon. I'm not saying I want that to happen, but he's already shown us that he's not going to. Do you see the issue?
With all of the most awful people in history, right back to the Roman Empire and beyond. We read books 100, 1,000 years later and marvel at how awful these people are, but we seem to divide when they're alive and ruling over us into people who can't see the wood for the trees and people who can't believe that everybody else can't see what's clear to them. There are no experts now, and it isn't going to happen. So what does Europe do? And I cannot see any scenario currently in which this is not the moment at which you abandon all hope that it's going to change and you act entirely in your own interests. So Europe now needs to come out against Donald Trump. Keir Starmer's involvement is probably irrelevant, which is a heartbreaking thing to say. It wouldn't have been without Brexit. And just look how quickly the people still clinging to the carcass of Brexit line up to amplify the interests of the foreign leader who wishes us harm. You think I'm exaggerating? Wait till you get to the most unhinged headline in history later in today's show. But what else does Europe do now but actually start treating the United States like an enemy?
Well, what do they do? You have to... He's right. Europe has to start, as the general said on Andrew Marr, thinking of America as a security threat and plan accordingly.
And going all in the first instance, on a trade war. Because the only language that bullies understand, and this is the closest you're going to get to expertise on a day like today, the only language that bullies understand is aggression. Whether or not we have the leaders, whether we have the people, whether or not we have the will, I do not...
Look at that. It took James O'Brien 60 years to come to the conclusion that Francis Parker Yockey came to all that time ago. Or that Julius Evola came to all that time ago. Funny how these things work, isn't it?
No. A glance to my right, I see Ursula von der Leyen speaking, and under the headline, Time to Build a New Independent Europe. But I've been hearing words a little bit like that ever since it became clear that Trump was going to abandon...
And ironically, should I say, the conclusion that Enoch Powell came to all that time ago as well.
Ukrainian interests upon the altar of his admiration for Vladimir Putin. Now is the time. Now is the time to act as if, not as if, to act because the United States is our enemy. It's the enemy of Europe. It's the enemy of the United Kingdom. It's the enemy of anything that stands in the way of Donald Trump's insatiable insanity and greed. And, I mean, how many times have we sat here and said, oh, well, that'll be it. That'll be the deal breaker. No one can hang on now. But here we are. That's my question for you. Ed Davey calling this morning for...
So there it is. I mean, I don't see how he's wrong at this moment. I really don't. There are some other stories I want to get to as well. There is the question of this board of peace everybody's talking about. There's also, let's do one more Greenland segment, then I'll get to Blair and then I'll do the super chats and so on. Let's do one more. This is, I forget this guy's name now.
So just first of all,
what's his name again? This guy who used to be on Channel 5, forget his name now.
I could ask you personally what you're making of the saber rattling from Trump towards Greenland.
The best case scenario, I think, is that this is a play on NATO as a whole, starting with Trump trying to pull out of Ukraine, making all the NATO...
Mark Wright, is it? Mark Wright? He played for England, didn't he? I thought Mark Wright was an England defender in World Cup 90. You know, he used to play for Liverpool. He's also called Mark Wright. Is that right? Or is it Ian Wright? Ian Wright also played for England, and he was a black fella. Ian Wright. A different Ian Wright. Matthew Wright. That's it. Matthew Wright. Matthew Wright.
European NATO allies spend more of GDP, go to 5% of GDP, and when many didn't, at least in the short term, maybe he ramped up and said, "Well, let's do another chess move and talk about Greenland again." And it seems that NATO countries are actually scrambling to cover those American needs for security in the Arctic. And that's my best case scenario, that it's a play on NATO allies.
Do you buy Trump's argument that it's for US security, Greenland, the US takeover of Greenland is vital for US security, or are you, like me, perhaps more interested in mineral rights and such like?
Does anyone really believe the security issue? The Chinese haven't been there for a decade. There is very low activity from the Russians. There isn't a security issue in the Arctic right now. There could be. It's a volatile world, and maybe we should all ramp up and be more aware of the Arctic. But right now, that doesn't seem to be the main issue, and not an issue of urgency. So, yeah, I think many Danes, including myself, are thinking about the minerals, the oil.
How would you like the United Kingdom to respond at this moment in time? We've sent a small number of troops. Keir Starmer has something of a track record of trying to avoid direct criticism of Donald Trump in recent months. How do you expect us to respond?
Well, it seems the UK has been quite good at balancing the things with Donald Trump. The state visit with the King was a good move.
Sorry, Danes, but this guy is way too boring. Just way too boring. Okay, last thing. This board of peace that Putin has been invited to, Tony Blair, who was out of the picture, remember the Arab state said, the Gulf state said, we don't want Tony Blair there. He's a war criminal. Somehow the Dark Lord has found himself back on the board of peace. Let's have a little look at this.
So I want to start with you, Errol, if that's all right with you. Good morning to you. Can you just explain to me what you think the thinking is here of Donald Trump behind appointing Sir Tony Blair to the Board of Peace for Gaza?
Yes, good morning, and thank you for having me. Regarding Tony Blair, I have to say from a MAGA perspective, he isn't the first choice that many people had. I would say that the likely analysis is there's sort of an age range of people who would probably pick up the phone and think of Tony Blair's name. And Donald Trump is in that group of people who still might think that he's a relevant person. And you put him in a position like that where he has only failed in all of his history for some reason. Maybe all of that failure will be useful. But honestly, it's a baffling choice to many of us.
Peter Oban, what do you make of it? Because, you know, you've been critical.
We know the real reason, don't we, friends? Watchers of this channel will know the real reason.
In the past, including in your book about Britain's role in the Middle East, I'm not sure Tony Blair would necessarily be the first pick if we're looking for somebody who has a clean record on this matter.
Yes, I think it's a bizarre appointment, really, not only because of Tony Blair's role, as you rightly highlighted, in the Iraq invasion, which was so catastrophic in its consequences in 2003, 22 years ago, but also Tony Blair's subsequent role in the Middle East as the Middle East envoy, but also as an advisor to various Middle East despotisms at the same time. His role as Middle East envoy, you quoted somebody saying, you know, he'd been hundreds of times, but he used to go, when he had this incredibly important and what a wonderful job, he'd go for three or four days a month. I made a television program about it for Channel 4, actually. He hardly went to Gaza at all. I mean, I think it was two or maximum three times, just for a drop-in. He became far too close to the Israeli establishment as against the Palestinian establishment. And it has to be said that one point about, if you look at this board, which Donald Trump has just produced, it's all male. I can't see a Palestinian member. It's a sort of, I don't think there's scarcely any Arab members. It's really a pro-consular situation.
They're all American. Every single member of the Board of Peace is an American, apart from Tony Blair. Tony Blair is the only non-American on the entire board.
It's a return to something like the British mandate, bizarrely, of the 1920s and 1930s, which was set up after World War One, and I think it's distasteful.
Well, interestingly, we've got a statement now from Tony Blair reacting to his appointment. He says he is honoured to be appointed to the Board of Peace. It's been a real privilege, he says, to work with Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. I look forward to working with them and other colleagues in line with the President's vision to promote peace and prosperity. He pours a lot of praise on Donald Trump, which is sort of compulsory these days if you want to be appointed to any sort of a position by him. For Gaza, Tony Blair says the President's 20-point plan to end the war was an extraordinary achievement. It was something many thought could not happen. The war did end and the hostages released. He goes on to say...
Blair wrote that plan, by the way. The 20-point plan was written by Blair.
It gives hope to people in Gaza that they can have a future different from the past, and to the Israelis that they may have a neighbour which does not threaten its security. Interestingly, he says, for Gaza and its people, we want a Gaza which does not reconstruct Gaza as it was, but as it could and should be. Any idea, Peter, what that means? We don't want a Gaza as it was, but as it could and should be, because we saw Donald Trump having some pretty outlandish ideas about what Gaza should look like.
Very quickly, before I do answer that, I mean...
Step one, digital ID. Step two, sure start. Step three, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. Step four, managerial oversight for each sector.
The war has not ended, by the way, since the so-called ceasefire was happened. There's 450 Palestinians have been killed by Israel. And it's, I think there's been about 800 violations of the ceasefire. It isn't, you know, there's been abatement of the killing. There hasn't been a ceasefire. And also, I mean, I don't think that any Israelis have been killed. I think the Israelis claim three, but that seems to possibly have been driving over some unexploded unexploded ordnance. But to answer your big question here about what's the role, don't forget that as the Financial Times revealed before the beast, this was set up. The Blair organization was involved in various sort of thoughts about the future of Gaza, and including the Trump Riviera. There was an Elon Musk manufacturing business. And look, this is what they are thinking about in terms of the future of Gaza. When no Palestinians have any sort of serious position, and it feels to me like a kind of, as I say, a foreign protectorate.
Hmm. Errol, do we have any idea what President Trump's thinking is here in the way that he's constructed his Board of Peace? I mean, as I say, it's quite interesting to hear Tony Blair talk about not rebuilding Gaza as it was, but looking at what Gaza should and could be. We saw President Trump, you know, I know it was sort of a fleeting moment, but it was quite revealing when he generated that AI video.
They're going to use it as a test drive for what they want to roll out everywhere else. I think my buddy Radlib suggested that Blair's Gaza will be the kind of... you know, they'll use it to test surveillance and, you know, AI tech and, various forms of digital prison. They'll test drive it in Gaza, and if it works, you know, to manage that population, they'll roll it out here. They'll roll it out all across the world. They'll roll it out in America.
Video with the Riviera, the Gazan Riviera, and statues of President Trump. Do we assume that he still wants to move in that direction of sort of...
Blair is building the Matrix. Larry Ellison, Tony Blair, and all these people are building the Matrix in real time. That's what they want to do with Gaza.
Of rebuilding Gaza in a completely new image?
I would think so, and I think the AI video was a little bit tongue in cheek. The subtext behind it, which is to your original statement that he made that they want to reconstruct Gaza in a new vision, is probably,
yeah. And Blair will be like, oh, think of the public private opportunities in Gaza. Come on, companies from all around the world, give us your highest bid. We're going to turn Gaza into a tech future superpower. This is going to be the digital future. This is going to be a modern economy run along the lines of the fourth industrial revolution. and we're going to prove that it can work even in the ashes of Gaza. And if it can work in Gaza, it will work in London. And if it can work in London, it will work in Chicago, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what they're going to use it for.
The reason why there is any hope here, I mean, if you wanted any chance of this to go on forward, as you had mentioned, it's sort of like the British mandate in the sense of just appointing ambassadors and appointing administrators. Yes, but imagine the British mandate had the support of the Arab world, and the Arab world was fantastically wealthy, bunch of oil traders, and they all had an interest in taking this zone and creating a free economic zone and going forward.
All right, that's enough of all that. I've had enough of LBC now. Okay, that's enough LBC for one day, for one lifetime. Even though it was one of those rare occasions where I agreed with pretty much everything said. All right, let's hit some super chats and super thanks because I've got some business to attend to after this. Tarkar says, for the average sensible centrist, does it make sense for him to be patriotic and care about territorial loss on the fringes? Then there is no moral unity between him and his elites. No, not really. JS says, could JM Greer's model of catabolic collapse help explain Trump's actions in Venezuela and Greenland, a collapsing empire scrambling for resources to prop up the system, draining the vessels dry? Yes, this is what I talked about with Black Horse when I had him on. I see this as late imperial spazzing out. The British Empire had a moment when it was like this in the 20s and the 30s, and even into the 40s and 50s, late empire spazzing out. There are many examples in history. That's what I think we're seeing here, right? The empires tend to get more exploitative and more open and more imperialistic right towards the end. So it looks like they're showing, they want to show they've still got strength. So they do this sort of shit. But it is really the beginning of the end for the American Empire. Coney says, if NATO ends up being disbanded and a new post-NATO security alliance is created in its place for Europe, I will celebrate that day like the Ewoks at the end of Return of the Jedi. I suppose. LGE says, AA, you're smart. James O'Brien is not. James O'Brien has Trump derangement syndrome. You do not. It's a slippery slope listening to this slop. You're better than this. A proper analysis would show that Greenland is a strategic asset and Trump is just a front man for US interests. The EU shun him, so he acts like this, but realpolitik prevails. The question is, LG, I went through that stuff with Brian Beletic last week. I've tried to make sense of it. Black Horse takes the view that this is actually America, not Trump, acting in this manner. My view, however, is that the thing is, whether you agree with on the specifics of what Trump is doing or not, the fact of the matter is that people in Europe, right or left, and people in Britain, right or left, have to start viewing America as a hostile power. And on that front, James O'Brien is correct. You have to start thinking about America in these terms. Tarkar says, do you think that all the migration into the UK or the US has had any impact on foreign policy? No, I don't. I think it's had no impact whatsoever on foreign policy. I think foreign policy is set by a tight-knit group in and around Washington who have specific special interests. That's what I think. LGE says, the Dane guy has not got a clue. The primary military base for the US space interests is in Greenland. It's called Thule. You dismiss unheard, but they have a way better analysis on this. The thing is, LGE, after years and years and years, I have watched people theory craft and 4D chess their way into trying to make sense of what the hell Trump is doing. And I've seen enough second guessing and copes and nonsense to try to make sense of what this crazy fucker is doing. And I've had enough of it at this point. I don't think there's necessarily this great grand plan on behalf of either Trump or the American deep state. I mean, part of it could be what Beletic said about using pulling American troops back to Greenland, you know, and having Europe as the advanced man against Russia, something like this. It could be that. Who knows? It could also not be. Well, you know, what I think is that we're seeing all sorts of noise and spazzing out on the part of Trump and the Americans in general. And it's over. It's the end. This is it. I cannot see circumstances where, you know, it's once you've kind of crossed these lines, it's hard to then go back. You know, now we're talking about war, right? War with Russia or war with America. Something's happening here. That's my real view. Tarkov says, no matter what, are dilettantism and mammonism the undefeated champions? Well, not all the way through history. There have definitely been times where mammonism has been defeated in history and dilettantism has been defeated. At the moment, and this is something I discuss in that conversation with Black Horse, the market seems somewhat unperturbed by what's happening, which is also a bit of an eyebrow raiser. They don't seem to care, whereas the political class certainly does seem to care. So that is somewhat interesting. But then the market never thinks anything's happening. Moderate message says, Donny's tariffs are Ball's less continental system made by Napoleon. And even then, we all know what Napoleon did to himself with his balls. Third man says, do you expect to see a general turn for the better in the UK in your lifetime? It's very hard to say. Very hard to say from this juncture. Maybe that things have to get better to get worse to get better. Maybe. It's very, I mean, at the moment, lots of question marks are in the air. So it's hard to say what happens. I do, I'm afraid to say, see a moment where there's a kind of big backlash against the right on the horizon. In the short term, you know, you have to, like the general said, be prepared for the worst. You always have to, your contingency, you always have to be prepared for the worst, not hope for the best and cope, right? I mean, you know, I could give you the fantasy version that, you know, 20 million people are going to be deported in the next 10 years or something like that. You know, I think you have to plan for the worst. Red says, I think Trump is using this as a way to collapse NATO because he doesn't have a way to do it politically and Congress would never let him. Okay, but why does Trump want to collapse NATO? That is the seat of American power. So why does he want to collapse it? Like, are you saying that Trump is willingly collapsing the American empire? For what purpose? He wants to make America great again by collapsing its empire? Seems odd to me. Sensible Center says, what do you think happens with the Chagos Islands? Honestly, who cares? Honestly, like, what does it matter what happens with the Chagos Islands? The Haroldium says, how incredible is this? Trump's Greenland tantrum is all a bit of theatre to warn shit-libbed Europeans up to the idea of Russian war, hence the Trump as Putler puppet meta, so America can concentrate on China in the Pacific. Well, that is essentially the Brian Beletic take, right? That is Brian Beletic's view. The point is, the question I've got is, that was happening anyway. That was already happening. All of the European powers were already on board with Pete Hegseth's division of labor plan. So I don't get what the Greenland thing has to do. Like, you could do that without the Greenland thing. The Greenland thing on its face doesn't make, like, none of the theories make any sense whatsoever to me. And maybe it's what O'Brien said. You can't provide reasoning where there is unreason. maybe Trump has looked at the map and just says, I want it. I want that piece of land there. And it's as simple as that. Maybe, I don't know. Moderate Message says, Trump and Putin want to bring back the League of Nations. Well, that worked out great last time, didn't it? Zinni said, I do think this is real. Yeah, I do too as well, Zinni. America really is trying to split or separate itself from Europe to make it feel as if it has to fight Russia alone, exactly as New Atlas said it would. Yeah, okay, but I'll refer you back to what I just said just now. If it's all about getting Europe to fight Russia, it was doing it anyway. You don't need to collapse NATO in order to do that, or to, you know, panic your allies, or to threaten war on Denmark. Like, I don't see how. I just don't see that. I don't see how it's necessary, because it was happening anyway. Moderate Message says, Trump is Dr. Evil. We need Austin. Send us Austin, please. Utvara says, Fuentes is doing apologia for Epstein Network and is a clear sign of where he stands in terms of friend and enemy. You were originally right about him. To be honest, I kind of tuned out American podcast stuff at the moment because, you know, the focus is here. I don't really know what to make of all of that. I think Fuentes does little purity tests on his own following on a regular basis to kind of, in his own mind, separate the wheat from the chaff. What Fuentes is looking for is loyalty. And he wants to try to separate off anyone who's not going to be loyal to him. That's why I think he says shit like this. But what do I know? I'm not here to psychoanalyze content creators. Utvara says, USA is very weak in the Arctic. Only one icebreaker. The Wooster says, Taco PSYOP rings hollow after the Maduro snatching. Yeah, that's also a good point. The Maduro thing was one example of not Taco, right? Cancel Culture says, Trump is a gangster, but you need to tune some other radio stations to your car, please. What other radio stations are there? Realpolitik says, Trump's playing Pillman's loose cannon gimmick, no? Yeah, he is. Trump is playing Brian Pillman, loose cannon, ECW era Brian Pillman. You're right. You're absolutely right, he is. Ornithology Rock says, if we assume Trump's law holds on Greenland, how do you think this might benefit him? You see, this is something that's interested me. I'm not sure if Trump's law does hold at the moment. Trump's law was holding, but I noticed that he had Tucker Carlson visit the White House after he won Anti-Semite of the Year. They gave Tucker Carlson Anti-Semite of the Year, and Trump still hosted him at the White House. On the Iran thing, they had the failed regime change operation. Trump said, oh, go on and protest. We'll have you back. Turn the boats around. Attack off. Nothing happened. If it was truly Trump's law, then something would have happened, right? But something's happened there. That's a very interesting question. I may need someone who's been following that more closely on the US side to talk me through it, because I don't see it at the moment. That's another interesting turn up for the books, is that Trump's law was holding, but in the past couple of weeks, I honestly think he's gone, like, he's even gone rogue on that. I can't see their interest in Greenland, and I can't see how the not following through on Iran is Trump's law. It's not. He seems to have, or hosting Tucker Carlson, if he was truly Trump's law, why did he have Carlson in the White House? Anybody answer me that? I don't know. Like I said, I always tell the truth as I see it. I coin Trump's law, but I don't want to have sunk cost or holding on to something when it doesn't hold true. And in the past week or so, 2 weeks, it hasn't held true. Trump's been doing an awful lot of stuff that seems to fly in the face of Trump's law. I'm just telling the truth. Marcos says, sorry, but these shitlibs are utterly oblivious as to their role in providing the fertile ground for Trump and right-wing populists generally to arise. Yeah, that is true, Marcos. And I've often said in previous times watching James O'Brien that if anybody has radicalized the British public, it has been O'Brien personally, with his liberal priors and his holding on to, you know, holding on to the failed policies of mass immigration and various other things, and a failure to be honest about the failure of the neoliberal project in general. I would agree that they are blind to their own role in it. I would absolutely, same with Rory Stewart, same with Alastair Campbell. Altius says, the fact is that the Euro right is almost entirely Zioslop. If it's put away, it's not the worst outcome. Clears away the slop. That's a good point. That's a very good point, which is why it's important not to stand with them at this moment. I don't stand with them. I don't stand with the sloppist at this moment, because, you know, if they get put away, it'll be them who gets put away. Marcos says, yeah, he's just described every US politician. Ranulf Whitewolf says, I'm still on the right and I disagree with some of your takes, but you are correct that the right is trying way too hard to rationalize Trump's lunacy. Yes, thanks for your honesty, Ranulf. Thanks for your honesty. Piter says, there's really no 4D plan besides empowering or the belief of empowering Zionism. Ronald Lauder's involvement is proof enough. I don't really see how the Greenland thing plays into Zionism, but maybe there's some angle I've overlooked, right? Maybe there's some angle I'm not seeing there. To me, it seems that there's been at least a miniature break with Netanyahu in the past week, in the past couple of weeks, because they wanted war with Iran, and it still hasn't happened again. It hasn't happened again. You know, and the failed regime change operation in Iran was embarrassing for the Zioshils. The Ayatollah embarrassed them again. That's two for two now. 2-0 to Ali K. That's basically what's happened. They failed again. Zinni says, well, if America is still a part of NATO when the war with Russia starts, it would be tied to join by Article 5. If it breaks NATO or gets itself thrown out, then it can say, not by problem, you deal with it. I don't know, though, we'll see. Well, that's what they've been talking about, Zinni, the fact that they cannot count on America to honour Article 5. Okay, now you can say that this is all hysteria and slop and all the rest of it. The fact of the matter is, if the European powers no longer believe in the sanctity of NATO, NATO is over, and they will then want to kick America out of their bases. They will then want to take care of their own security, and that will be the end of the game. It will be the end of the American empire as we know it, and it will have been Trump's doing. Now, that's an outcome. A lot of these shitlibs don't want that outcome. I do want that outcome, right? I want an end to the American empire. But it's baffling as to why Trump, of all people, is doing it when he's been acting in this aggressive imperialist manner. What he's actually doing is bringing about the end times for American power in the world. It's strange. Okay. Let's see if there's been any more super chats while we've been talking. Heusing says, do you think it's important to maintain the pretense of the international rules-based order to prevent a fall into chaos? Every great man seems to restore order to chaos when rules become arbitrary. Every regime needs legitimacy, and the international rules-based order was the moral legitimacy that the American Pax Americana had, and it's basically just throwing that off and going rogue. And, you know, this is what Dickie Spencer has talked about. It's like, it's better to have, even if it's a lie, right? Even if it's still legitimating. What Trump is doing, he's acting like a gangster and delegitimizing American authority, if you want to put it that way, because he's just making it brutal Macht Politik, raw power politics. And in that sort of scenario, you know, well, you can see how quickly the pennies fall from the eyes of even the shitlibs. That's basically what's happening here. Let's have a look at some super thanks. We do need to get out of here fairly soon. Okay. So there's been quite a lot of super thanks too. Oh dear, I didn't know there were so many. I'm going to have to blast through them. Okay. Did Curtis Yarvin and the Dark Elves fool the right back into being neocons? The Moritan says, building on your analogy, I would argue that the gay, that's the global American empire, is a two-headed eagle. One represents American hard power, which, as you say, is slowly being supplanted by Zionists. The other represents the globalists, who I believe are an expression of the conquered European nation's biospirit, like how Alexander adopted Persian customs and many other examples. This explains their Faustian nature, their obsession with technology, and why they are always weaker, and why a lot of us Europeans are drawn to them when forced to choose. The eagle may be split in two if neither side can reconcile. I agree with that analysis. I agree with everything you said there, Moritan. I agree with everything you said. Eyes That Watch says, AA, this is the, again, a video with Todd Fuentes versus Tate versus Trads, who is right on dating. That was originally called something about the sexual marketplace, and YouTube sent me a note to say, we don't like the word sexual. Take it down. I was like, fuck's sake. So I had to change the title to that. And he says, AA, your econ analysis makes sense, but you are ignoring DINK, that is the double income, no kids, or SINK, single income, no kids, lifestyle, which consume heavily, hugely and frivolously, e.g. expensive dinners and holidays. I would wager that savings rates increase when people become parents, which is a GDP leakage. Very good point. Also, if you're a DINK or you're a SINK, you have, in classic Austrian econ terms, high time preference. That is, you are hedonistic in your lifestyle and your spending, whereas when you become a parent, you become a lower time preference. Absolutely correct view, and certainly our system prefers the high time preference, or at least it has done in the past 50 years or so. The meritocracy debate nobody wants to have. Again, another Todd Lewis interview. On the interviews, by the way, I'm fiddling about with the balance. Today, there was an interview this morning about Chinese history. I have a solo video at 6 about pro wrestling terms, political kayfabe, and like a kind of 101 type lesson from me. And I'm fiddling about with the balance. You know, do people want two interviews a day, one interview, one solo? And I'm messing around with the format at the moment. You know, like tomorrow there's going to be one interview with Todd Lewis, one interview with Black Horse. Today is one interview, one solo. But like, let me know in the side chat or in the comments or whatever, what sort of format you like. Do you prefer one video a day? Do you like the double shots and a stream like this? Or I don't know. I'm messing around at the moment. I'm seeing, you know, I'm tinkering about like Claudio Ranieri, like the Tinker Man. Tinkering about, I am. Orion Fitzpatrick says, the reveal of Scott Adams' terminal cancer diagnosis that may have been lost in the news cycle, as it was the same day as Joe Biden's cancer announcement, rest in peace. That was on last week's Office Hours, and I did mention that on air. I found out about it on air, and rest in peace to Scott Adams. The meritocracy debate says, this is Vivek the poet, who says, could you not argue that loyalty is a subcategory of merit? It seems to me that if the answer to meritocracy and nepotism question isn't the same person, it means that you're losing the broader civilizational game. That's an interesting point. And one of the things that I've been enjoying a little bit or trying to do in these interviews, certainly with Todd Lewis now, we've had a number of conversations, is that I'm kind of playing devil's advocate or pushing back or trying to needle on. I'm not trying to be like a hostile interviewer, but I'm not like, I don't want it to be, yeah, I agree, Todd, I agree, Black Horse, and so on. So I'm trying as much as possible to voice countervailing views, even if I don't have them, if that makes any sense, or even if I ultimately agree with the guest or whatever, just to try to tease out points. And I hope people can appreciate that, you know, you have to build up a rapport with certain people. So obviously if I have a guest on, you know, and they've been on once, I'll be really polite to them. But now with Todd, we're on 7-8 different shows together now. I can start to push back a bit. We can start to have a back and forth. That's kind of what I'm doing on some of these interviews that are coming out this week as well. And that's what I did on the meritocracy one. I tried to steel man the other side as much as I could. I think it keeps everybody intellectually honest to do that, right? To steel man the other side. The Jonash says, I would have loved it if you'd have challenged the concept of Asabaya against meritocracy a bit more. For example, Mongolians versus China might lead to problems defining merit by post hoc. That's a good point. Todd said the Mongolians won because of merit. You could very much argue that the Mongolians won because they had superior Asabaya, but then he might argue that is the merit. Their superior Asabaya was the merit because look what won on the battlefield. So it kind of swings and roundabouts, but I understand the point. Poods on Russia, America, and the European right. That was a video with the two German guys from Consequent Fry. Now, I have to say, Blamblas, right, of all the guests, had the roughest ride in the comments. He had a rough ride. He's young, he's spiky. You know, he's a bit posh and a bit London-y compared to some of my other guests. So he had a rough ride. He was being, you know, he was provocative, and he had quite a bit of pushback. I have to say the German guests also had a lot of comments that were pretty unpopular because of their Russophobia. And there's quite a lot of people in the comments who, for whatever reason, have been generally more Russophilic, is that the right word? Or, you know, balanced or something. And they were particularly hostile to the Russians. So they got a lot of hate in the comments. I thought the German guys were quite cool, to be honest. I enjoyed talking to them. It's all right to disagree on some things. Todd, in an upcoming video, takes a more Russophilic view, and I do my best to, you know, be the neutral interviewer and push back and try to think of, like, what would James O'Brien say and things like that. But, yeah, this guy Poot says, a lot of the reaction to this video is people upset that you dared mention Russian influence in Western right-wing politics, and people upset that a German dared advocate for German interests. Personally, I found the conversation fascinating. I was a hardline Brexiteer in 2016. I now find myself questioning whether or not Brexit was a good idea in the first place. Well, thank you very much for your intellectual honesty, Poods. I mean, I voted Remain. I don't particularly regret my vote, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, I do think that you don't hear the German perspective, like the German national perspective, that often on a channel like this. I thought some of the hostility to the Germans was a little bit surprising in the comments, to be honest. Like, I kind of get it as well, but yeah, I don't know. I thought that you guys were a bit harsh on them. I thought they weren't that bad. And I thought the Blamblas, okay, in that case, I can see why you may have rubbed people up the wrong way, right? But also, like, I don't know, give him a shot. You know, I'm doing my Alex Ferguson thing, trying to bring through the kids, guys. You know, give them a, you know, they're all of you are Alan Hansen. You're with nothing with kids. Who are these bloody German upshots? Who's this Blamblas twat, you know? tough crowd. Jonash says, potential missing piece why US wants full control of Greenland. Startup named Praxis by the Thiel Network wants to construct a free city there, pay of the neocons and SV bros at the same time. That was on the Maduro capture video from last week. Owen says, this is again on that German video with the about Russia and America and Europeans. And he's given 50 American dollars here. Thank you very much for your generosity, Owen. Oz Owen says, observing the situation with Diego Garcia at the Chagos Islands, can one say it is irrational for the US to acquire Greenland? If you don't own it, you don't control it. America's previous expansion has been a net benefit and was purchased under a potential of force. For example, the Louisiana Purchase from Napoleon was premised on attacking the New Orleans port, and the Alaskan territories were purchased under the presumption that Britain would acquire them by force from Russia. I mean, I don't say that the desire to acquire Greenland is necessarily irrational if you're thinking in terms of conventional empire building. The problem is that it's like, you know, we're 100 years or more removed from those sorts of deals in the 19th century. We haven't seen shit like this for 120 years. Right. So it's kind of like a jolt against the kind of norms that we've known for the past 80 years in the post-world order. And it's being done by the head of that order, the hegemon America. That's why, I mean, I don't necessarily say it's irrational from the point of view of just land acquisition. I do think it's irrational in terms of alienating, upsetting your allies and breaking up the NATO alliance for reasons that are not obvious at the moment, when NATO is an expression of American power in the first place. That's the bit I don't see. It's like, well, you trade off, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, Greenland's got a tiny population, doesn't have that much stuff there. Europe's got about 500 million people in it, something like that. Anyway, let's carry on. The Tsarist Stalinist says, as someone of mixed Russian and Scandinavian descent, I've been hoping for a healing of the relations between Russia and Central Europe if they can shake off the American yoke, perhaps even Western Europe. But listening to people like this guy just blackpills me on the issue. Well, Tsarist Stalinist, listen to Todd Lewis on my interview with him tomorrow, because he has a plan for European security that goes along the lines that you're talking about, okay? And I, as much as possible, push back on him in that interview, but we really explore the possibility of Europe going anti-America and pro-Russia in the future, okay? So that might be a more white-pilling conversation for you. But making me want to turn towards Russia and say, listen, there's no point in trying to befriend these people. They hate you at a visceral level. They will always see you as an enemy, whatever you do or say. So you just need to walk away and let them destroy themselves. I hope I am wrong, though. Yeah, it's a very difficult issue, because I don't believe that those German guys were LARPing, or that their animosity towards the Russians was put on, or a lie, or they've been paid. That sentiment is there. It is there. Okay, and if from the German perspective, you can see why it's there as well. And also, you know, if I was a Russian, after the shit that's been said about the Russians by Europeans, I could understand why there'd be lingering resentment on the Russian side as well. Okay, but anyway, we explore a lot of this in great detail in that conversation with Todd Lewis. Mitternacht says, you seem to be taking notes during these streams. What is your method? Well, sometimes I'm taking notes, sometimes I'm doodling, sometimes I'm writing down things that I'm to remember to say, because my mind wanders. So it's a combination of things. After one of them, I'd done some lovely sketches of geometric shapes, and I started shading them in. And I even looked up like one of those doodle psychoanalyzers. You know, what does it say about me that I'd be doing that? But it just so happens that there's a pen and paper there, and it's hard not to write stuff down if it's in front of you. Cancel Culture says, okay, so here's a pile of ones on my video yesterday, which was about Nick Fuentes uncomfortable at the club. But if you watch that video, it was actually me reflecting on living life as an introvert. I'd had an especially a busy weekend. I had various social engagements. My parents came down. I had to give a talk on Thursday. I met various, in fact, I met a particularly famous British podcaster on Thursday. I'm not going to mention who that was. I won't tell you who that was. You can guess, but let's just say a famous left-wing podcaster. I finally met him in a pub. And, I was exhausted by the end of that because it takes it out of me. And I was just reflecting on how I cope with my introversion and my kind of, it's not antisocial. It's just, it drains energy. And I thought it was time just to have an honest conversation about it to see how many other people there are. And if you go to that video, there are hundreds of people who related to what I was saying and related to my, comments on like Nick in the club and I hate to go to nightclubs. And I don't think Nick looked that comfortable in that scenario either. But anyway, he says, I used to be an extrovert in my 20s. Now I'm in my 60s. I just trigger people before I open my mouth. I love my own company. I love having conversations that interest me with myself rather than small talk. Well, there we go. I mean, I found that as I've got older, I've become more introverted rather than less. But also because I feel when you're younger, you feel like you have to do this stuff. You feel like, there's an obligation, but there's also like, you have to go out. You have to, but I don't know, maybe it's having kids that changes it. Maybe it's just getting older or something, but I feel like I'm getting more like that rather than less like that. Overvivid says, I've taken several personality tests and I always show up as Int J. Myself also Overvivid. I am an Int J. Whenever I've done that test, I come out as Int J, or sometimes it says the architect Int J, right? But I always consistently am an Int J. He says, it's pretty interesting looking at other people who have these traits because you kind of find your people. Anyway, the best example, I mean, I'd imagine because every content creator creates an audience in his own image, right? I.e., people like people like themselves. So I'd imagine that my audience would massively over-index an Int J. If I had to guess, there'd be tons of Int J's in my audience because Int J's will also think like me in some respects, right? But anyway, he says, the best example I have on film about the difference between these two groups of people is the movie The Big Country with Charlton Heston and Gregory Peck. I think the era of extroverts is coming to an end and they will be forced to accept the generosity of introverts. Jamie Smith says, AA sat in the corner of the club on his own. Tone comes in, open shirt, no tie. Nobody puts AA in the corner, blade hands. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Cameron Kirby says, I recorded that and I thought, am I going to put this up? Am I really going to put it up? But now I've put it up, I'm kind of glad I have. I'm kind of glad, 20,000 people watched it. And looking at the comments, I think people appreciate that I did put it up. It's a different type of video from me. Anyway, Cameron Kirby says, thanks, AA, for highlighting our struggle as oppressed introverts. Finally, someone representing our lived experience. I feel seen. Exactly. It's all about the lived experience. You have to respect my, it's not pronouns, what is it? My Int J's, my initials, my Int J traits. Zara Stalinis says, I can relate to this video, though I think it is useful to distinguish between introversion and social anxiety. Yeah, I don't have social anxiety, right? I don't have you can drop me anywhere and I can cope and I can talk to people and I'm like not bad at communicating and I can make chat. I can do what it's not social anxiety. It is the fact that I just kind of it drains me and I dread it and all the stuff I said in the video, right? I'm not like shy in that way. I mean, look, I'm doing this talk. Thousands of people are watching right now. It's not, I can get on stage. I gave lectures, right? Hundreds of lectures in my lifetime in front of large groups of people. It's not that. It's not shyness. It's not anxiety. It's not that. It's not like a social disorder. It's introversion. That's what I'm talking about. He says, I used to think of myself as a complete autist that couldn't socialize. However, after forcing myself to go to social events and meeting people, I realized that I could be quite fun and that I had a lot of social anxiety. I'm still introverted and I need time to recharge like you're describing, but I don't experience that crippling anxiety nearly as often anymore. Yeah, and I think you're right to distinguish those two things. And, you know, the socializing in itself could be a set of skills, right? But it's that is different from what I'm talking about in that video. Okay, and that's what I was trying to distinguish. It's not like a kind of, you know, it's not like character exuberance or ability to talk or shyness or anything like that. It is about this energy management thing. And it's about, you know, just the dread of it. The dread, like, not, and it's not a dread from social anxiety. It's just seeing it as a huge ordeal, you know? Anyway, I think that's enough about that. Is anybody still here? AA just doesn't want to socialize with you. all right. I know I have to make a move, guys. Thank you very much for watching. I'll just do one last check on Super Chats. There is one. Cockvilvas Maximus says, why can't Greenland be about the missile defense thing that Trump says it is? Maybe it's less complicated than people think. Well, the reason for that is just because there's nothing stopping him doing that now, which is what the Danes are saying. Marco says, you missed my super chat in between the two you mentioned about voting for Trump, if only for the chance of smashing the rotting liberal edifice, says Marcos. Oh, did I? Knowing what I do, indeed, Trump is a failure and nigh intolerable, especially in his iron law, I'd still vote for him, if only to ruin the rotten edifice. Yeah, my worry is, Marcos, that he's not actually dismantling it. He's not actually doing it. Right? So he's invoking Thomas Hobbes and Carl Schmitt and saying, oh, my morality stands above the law. You know, and he's rattling cages. But internally, he has not actually ripped up the structures of America. He has not done the base takeover. He has not crossed the Rubicon. And all those other things that Curtis Yarvin said. In which case, midterms, blue emperor, blue Caesar, and tons of people are going to go to jail. And this time they won't be messing around. And you've got to be prepared for that. Tsarist Stalinist says, oh, sorry, Zinni says, if America is still part of NATO when the war with Russia starts, if it breaks NATO or gets itself thrown out, it can say, not my problem, you deal with it. I think I said, did Tsarist Russia said, they're using Trump to do the dirty work they can't get away with otherwise. Next term, they can stick a blue president in there and denounce Trump. Now that we already have Greenland, they can't give it back because BSBS. Interesting point. I've thought about that as well. You see, Trump is a good tool for the deep state because they can use him to do stuff they wouldn't usually do as a kind of Schmittian exception. And then they can hide, then they can put in a blue president and try to undo the damage in image terms while keeping all the gains. That's a good point. I've thought about that before as well. Jay says, J8 or J18 says, on Iran, Trump was likely warned they have insufficient force to take them on. They only have a few ships in the region currently due to Venezuela, perhaps. Alex says, we are tied at the waist to the great and little Satan, economically, militarily, and intelligence-wise. We need to talk about what separation looks like and how dissidents can capitalize. Alex, when you say we, are you talking about Britain or are you talking about Europe more generally? If you mean Britain, I'd agree. If you mean Europe more generally, less so. Ranulf Whitewolf says, will we get any more Talking Turley videos? Not for the time being. I'm a bit busy to engage in such frippery at the moment. George Peterbrook says, I can't help but notice the two supposed right-wing victories of the West, that being Trump and Brexit, is coming to an end. Yes, I agree with that, George. And C123 says every day is a new opportunity to be revealed. I never voted for Donny or any of his friends. Well, there you go, C123. Bully for you. And with that, we've come to the end. It's promo code Shorjan for 25% off all courses. Most importantly of all, friends, get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.